We're proud to be sponsored by MyFlex Learning. MyFlex Learning is a scheduling platform that helps middle and high schools meet the individual needs of all students. Schools can easily create and manage time for flex blocks, win time, activity periods, RTI, counselor and teacher appointments, and much more. And with its built-in accountability tool and reporting features, MyFlex Learning solves your challenges around getting kids where they need to be and understanding how flex time is spent. Make your flex time work for you. Visit myflexlearning.com/B to learn more and receive $500 off the first year. That's myflexlearning.com/BE.
Every child deserves a team. That's the belief behind Jigsaw Learning, a proud sponsor of the B Podcast Network. And it's why the company, founded by educators Curtis and Lorna Hewson, focuses on ensuring success for all learners through collaborative response, an approach in which every child is supported by a team. Through customized professional learning that incorporates workshops, leadership development, online learning opportunities, and more, Jigsaw Learning can guide you every step of the way to create a plan to maximize the collective capacity in your schools. Learn more at jigsawlearning.ca.
Right now in education, we are facing two major challenges. Every day we come to work. The first one is change. There's always change around the corner. So how do we create not just positive change, but sustainable change? Second, the shortage. And when I say the shortage, I know everybody listening knows exactly what I'm talking about. There are shortages and we don't have any answers for it. Hey everyone, Dr. Jones with a new episode of Seeing to Lead. And this week, I talk with Dan Kelly. Now, Dan Kelly has a very extensive background in school leadership. He was the president of the National Association of Secondary School Principals. He was on their board of directors, and he has a ton to say about getting administrators into the role and creating positive, sustainable change. Two things he touches on in our conversation. The idea that securing excellent early mentors who tap people on the shoulder to become leaders or administrators is key. It's essential to identify individuals early so that they get on that path as soon as possible so that they can be as successful as possible when they step into the position. Now, it takes more than just tapping somebody on the shoulder or highlighting that you think they're ready for leadership. They have to want to be in that position. And often, as Dan points out, principals are their own worst enemy. All you principals listening to this, how many times have you been in public saying how difficult your job is? Think about what that sounds like to somebody that may be considering stepping up and serving a broader school community. So we need to be careful of the language that we use when we're describing our own positions, and that might have to do with our own mindsets. Also, the idea of change. See, successful change, as Dan explains, isn't always about buy-in, but oftentimes it's about the readiness of those who need to implement the change. Specifically, you need to spend extra time with those veteran teachers who have been practicing the same way for years and are comfortable with it. That's not to say they're against you. They're just uncomfortable. And so we need to work to meet those expected to enact change where they are. Now, that could be a physical space. That could be an emotional space. That could be a mental space. But it's our job to do that. And now, finally, Dan said something so profound when we were talking about different changes having to do with exams and grading practices. You know, it's not our job to prepare students for bad practices happening at the next level. It's our job to implement the best practices right here, right now. This is going to be a fantastic conversation. I know you're going to learn a ton from Dan Kelly. As always, thanks for tuning in. And remember, hit that subscribe button, leave an honest rating and review on iTunes or Spotify. I can't explain how much it helps the podcast get to more people so that more people can benefit just like you. So let's get to getting better with Dan Kelly on Seeing to Lead.
Let's talk about flex time in schools. The potential benefits to our students make it worth exploring. More time for personalized learning, increased choice and agency for students, and the increased engagement that comes along with it, dedicated time for intervention. Overall, as school leaders, it gives us and our faculty more tools to increase academic achievement. But the implementation and management of flex time can be a challenge. Tricky logistics and a lack of clear accountability systems can prevent teachers from buying in and can hold us back from ensuring students make good use of their time. I'm pleased to share that MyFlex Learning provides a solution to these challenges and more. MyFlex Learning helps you create and manage flexible time for any purpose. And with seamless SIS integration, a student locator, flexible daily rostering, and an intuitive mobile app, it eliminates the common challenges of implementation and management. Want to see for yourself? Visit myflexlearning.com/B to learn more and receive $500 off the first year of use. That's myflexlearning.com/BE.
Be somebody that learns from others, is reflective about practice, is willing to challenge the status quo, works to develop meaningful relationships, and to continue to grow as a learner, you know, to continue to grow as a parent, to continue to grow as a husband, and just to keep trying to get a little bit better every day, I guess.
Dr. Chris Jones here, and welcome to Seeing to Lead, a show designed to help leaders increase their ability to effectively support, engage, and empower their staff through intentional practices so that they create an environment where everyone reaches their greatest level of success. On Seeing to Lead, communication rules the day as we hear voices from both teachers and leaders in an effort to examine perspectives, highlight misunderstandings, and provide steps to ultimately bridge the gap between what teachers need and provide through thoughtful dialogue. This show is about amplifying voices, creating understanding, and providing information to help everyone continually improve. I want to personally thank you for taking the time. Now, let's get to getting better. Daniel Kelly is an associate teaching professor of educational leadership and policy at the University of Rhode Island. He previously served as the principal of Smithfield High School in Smithfield, Rhode Island. During his tenure, he successfully implemented sustainable change initiatives that profoundly impacted the school's learning culture. Dan's contributions to education extend to national leadership roles as well. He served as the president of the National Association of Secondary School Principals during the 2017 and 2018 school year and was a member of the NASSP Board of Directors for 5 years. His broad experience in education includes positions as a high school assistant principal, a high school and middle school special education teacher, and a middle school math and science teacher. In recognition of his outstanding leadership, he was named the Rhode Island Secondary Principal of the Year in 2012. I am really excited to have Dan on the podcast today. I followed him as he rose up the ranks in NASSP, and he's going to have a ton of great things to tell us about these different initiatives for culture and sustainable change. So welcome to the podcast, Dan.
Thank you very much, Chris. Appreciate it. It's great to see you. Great to be with you here today.
This is good. I always like talking to different individuals who have different leadership perspectives, but you've got that national level perspective where you have a broad overview of a bunch of different ways of going about leadership. So that must have been a pretty exciting adventure or journey or experience. Could you tell us a little bit how you got to the idea of wanting to serve at the national level?
That's a whole podcast just around that question. So I was very fortunate to have excellent early mentors when I was in the teaching field. And there were a friend of mine, was a very good friend of mine, Mark Lafayette, who was a retired principal out of Michigan. He kind of found me through, we met in college. We were rugby players and teammates together in college. And then he got me to go to Michigan to start my teaching career. And he was the one that kind of said, you know what? I think you'd be really good at being a building leader. Let's get you involved in things. And so it started with accreditation and those kind of things. And then we started taking classes together at Eastern Michigan to start getting into, getting the degree to be a leader. And so that's kind of what kickstarted it was having somebody that believed in me and said, hey, I think you'd be really good at this. And then, you know, 15 years later, I'm in a position where I'm running for president for NASSP. At the time, the way NASSP was organized, we were in regions, And each state had an opportunity in within like a 10-year time frame to nominate somebody to the board of directors. And I happened to be on our state principal's board here in Rhode Island. And the executive director said, "Hey, listen, our turn is coming up to put somebody on the board. I'd like to put you there." And I was like, "All right, you know, it's one of those things. Like, all right, sir, whatever. If you think I'd be good at it, I'll go for it." And she said at times, she goes, "But there's one caveat to it." She goes, "You have to run for president." And I remember this moment and I laughed out loud. I had no idea what that meant. I had no idea what that entailed. And I was like, "Sure, all right, well, we'll see what happens." And so I got on the board and really jumped in and worked on the finance committee and some different things internally with our organization. But wow, did it open up doors and open up a whole nother world of leadership for me. And when you get to sit around a table and talk to principals from Arizona and Oklahoma and Hawaii and the state of Washington and Alabama, you get all these new perspectives, and it just opened up so many doors and opened up so many new ways of looking at leadership and trying to understand these very complex issues that we're dealing with and how the individual regions are trying to handle that. And I can share a couple of examples of that. But basically, I that's how I got on. My executive director said, "Hey, listen, we're tap on the shoulder, you're going in." And then it was around year three or four, internally on the board, we would say, "All right, who wants to run for president?" And I didn't have an interest that year in running for president because there were people that were more senior that I thought were going to run. And we were sitting at a board meeting in Arizona and nobody raised their hand. And I was like, "All right, well, this is kind of strange." And it's a big commitment. And you have to take a year off from your school and you're traveling around the country. And so ultimately, you know, I threw my hat in a year earlier than I anticipated and ran for it and won the election. And then I got to be president-elect and then president for a year. And wow, that opportunity to travel around the country, talk to principals, again, that opened my eyes to how do we coach and support principals, and like listening to different stories really set me on where my trajectory is now and that work that I'm doing now to coach and mentor principals, especially early career principals.
I mean, there are a couple things in that journey that you talk about that I think people listening can relate to, but one of the biggest things, and just correct me if I'm wrong, is that mentor piece and having a strong, solid mentor. And you finally mentioned it near the end of your explanation as part of our state association for administrators. This past year, we ran a tap on the shoulder campaign because of the large administrator shortage that we're facing. And that's exactly what we called on it, the tap on the shoulder. So, you know, when you talk about having an early mentor and you talk about coaching and supporting and that important piece of it, how can people locate individuals to move up? We talk about it all the time, and we had that tap on the shoulder program. Is there a quality you look for that when you're mentoring people that you say they're going to really excel right away?
I think we have to, as principals, you know, we have to identify, just like Mark did with me, we have to find them early in their career and say, "Hey, you know what? I think you'd be good at this." And then put them in positions to try it where they're, you know, they're low stakes type things, like accreditation or leading an initiative or leading some sort of school improvement team. Early on, get them involved to get them that little bit of a taste of that. But I also think we have to, and this is something that I noticed that, especially, you know, in those 2 years of COVID, I had to check my own, the words I was saying, the language I was using to talk about the job. And I sometimes wonder if we hurt ourselves because we're like, "Oh, you know, this job's 24/7. Oh, I had to deal with this parent." And we say those things publicly sometimes and we're hurting ourselves. We're hurting the future principals because they go, "Oh, maybe I don't want to do that if you're talking like that." So I think we have to be careful sometimes of the language we're using, especially publicly, especially around our young teachers who we may want to target at some point to take over a building or a leadership role.
And that's really hard to do because I always say the principalship is the toughest job you'll ever love. And I absolutely love being a principal. But I have teachers in my building, when I'm speaking to them, they'll say, "Man, there's no way I would ever want to do your job." And it's like a letdown. I'm like, because I look at these people, I'm like, you'd be so good. And that happened. I talked to other people that move to different positions. Maybe they move up to central office positions. And one in particular has come to mind. He says that every principal he's talked to has always made him feel like he never wants to be a principal. And he said, I'm the one that's come the closest to making him feel like he wants to be, but I don't outweigh the others that he's heard about, like you said, the late hours and the argumentative people.
Yeah, it's not an easy job right now. And we are expected as school leaders to do so many things and solve so many problems that it takes a special person to want to jump in and do this role. And so, but we have a crisis. We need good leaders, and we need leaders of color to be working with our changing demographics, demographics in our schools. And so that's a big issue. And that's one of the things that I'm working on in my new role as I start to build out a master's program for future and aspiring leaders. How do we try to get a wider range of candidates to join a program?
That is so difficult, even at the teacher level, because that's a conversation that we have as the demographics of our school change and it becomes more diverse. Well, we want a staff that reflects that. And so when we're hiring new staff, we look for that. But it's interesting. I've started a BIPOC principals advisory committee that advises me on their lived experience and what they're hearing at home from their students that may not talk to me or may not trust me to enough to give me that honest, right in your face answer about this is what we're experiencing. And so I ask them, you know, what are some sources? Where are some places that I can go to get more candidates? And they're honest with me. But when you dig down into it, what it comes down to is it's almost like a catch-22, because we try to hire a diverse staff, but that individual doesn't want to stay there if they're the only person there or they're the minority there. And so they leave. Well, we can't make them not the only person there if the people continue to leave because they don't have people there that we have trouble hiring. So it's really that, you know, that Gordian knot that we're really trying to undo. And the same is true for the principalship and leadership at the building level. You know, something you mentioned, you were talking and it had to do with empowering people early so that they can become leaders and giving them those opportunities, putting them in charge of those smaller initiatives. And one of the things that you had mentioned or that I read in your biography was that initiatives that impact culture. And, you know, I take that to mean positively impact culture. Could you help us out with what are some of those initiatives? Because I think if we improve that culture, we improve our narrative and improve our stories and attract more people to move into leadership roles.
So one of the things that we try to tackle early on in my time at Smithfield was the whole grading conversation and how zeros impact the culture in our classroom and the climate in our classroom and our learning, our students' learning. How does homework come into play? You know, revisions, those kinds of things. And so we spent a lot of time, almost 2 years as a leadership team and as a faculty, really digging into that the data behind that and why were we doing certain practices that research said maybe we shouldn't be doing. And so I remember very clearly one of my leadership team members coming to me, and this is after 2 years and multiple faculty meetings and all this conversation, and they basically said, come on, Dan, it's time to move. We've got to get going on this. Like, we're going all in. Let's do this. And so we had a faculty meeting and they all looked at me and there were a couple who went, wait, we're actually doing this? And I was like, yeah, like we're, you know, no more zeros. We're going to look at how we're handling homework and this revision. And it led to some pretty heated conversations that got to, they were going to do a vote of no confidence in me over grading practices. And I had thought I had done everything right in getting the buy-in and spending the time and having these difficult conversations. But when it came, let's push and let's go actually, you know, pull the trigger on this conversation and the implementation just didn't happen. And we had to pull back. And I said, all right, we're not ready for this. And it took about 6 months. And then one of my departments came to me and said, we're not ready to give up on this. We want to do this. This makes a lot of sense. And then we kind of had this grassroots effort. And so the social studies department kind of took it on and started to do their version of it. And then the electives kind of went and they did their, and so it took a lot longer and we got there, but I did all the things that the textbooks say and your courses say about buy-in. But when it came to that reality moment, it was absolutely not. We are not doing this. This is not right for kids. And that was a big moment in my career.
Well, I mean, I don't know how it could be. The idea, you know, over a practice such as grading, where there's plenty of research that shows different ways that are beneficial to judge whether a student understands or not. And they're a huge change. I have to ask you, seeing that you followed all the textbook, and I'm using air quotes, the textbook advice on how to implement change, when the rubber met the road, what was it that finally tipped it? Was it just that one department saying we're not ready to give up on this? I mean, you personally, it must have breathed new life into you.
There were a couple of key seasoned veteran teachers that were hanging on to this notion of, well, this is the way it's always been done. And I don't know if I necessarily did a good job of really listening to them individually to hear out their concerns. And it was a fascinating conversation when they said, well, we're going to do a vote of no confidence. And I went, all right, well, go ahead. And I got to give the union president a lot of credit because he stood up and he said, listen, guys, this is what direction you want to go in. That's fine. He goes, but I'm not speaking for you at that school committee meeting. You have to be prepared to stand in front of the school committee and tell them why this is a bad idea. And the union president was a guidance counselor. So he saw it from that perspective. And so he would never admit that that we were doing the right thing necessarily, but he knew it was impacting kids, some of the practices that were happening. And not one teacher would go publicly and do it. And it kind of died there. But I'd also heard they weren't ready yet. And so we'll pull back and we'll, you know, and see where things went. And we're, you know, 10 years later in a much, much better place. When I left Smithfield, we still weren't there 100%, but we were definitely moving in a better direction.
You know, grades is such a huge conversation because it's so ingrained. We made a change at my school where we got rid of midterms and finals.
Yep.
There's due to tons of reasons, but the idea of what assessments truly are used for, the idea of increasing face time, get rid of the half days, all that stuff.
Yep.
And boy, I'll tell you what, I would, and we still have conversations about it, but I would take that any day over standing in front of trying to change the grading system as far as level of difficulty, just because it is so ingrained and that is the way we've always done it. And that's what people cling to a lot of the times. And it gives them that sense of, they attach the sense of education to getting grades, and it offers them a sense of control as well.
Grades are used as in a transactional way. And it is used to control behavior. And I talk a lot about grading in my undergraduate class with future teachers. And we talk about the game of school and how easily you can manipulate this and how class rank is manipulated and number one kid can manipulate the system. And there's just so many things that are wrong with it. I really truly believe that it's the holy grail to school reform. If we can kind of fix some of that conversation and get that out in the open with families about some of the practices that our teachers are doing that are harming kids and, you know, trying to chase points. But you're right about that midterm and final. You're losing 2 weeks of instruction because it's the exam week and we're half days. And then it's a week of preparation to take these exams. Right. And I'm going, we're losing close to 10 to 14 days of instruction for something that you don't even have a conversation with as a department to see how you're going to change your practice, and we got rid of those probably 12 years ago. And at the end of my last year, they're like, we have to bring final exams back. And I'm like, what? If you're going to tell me how you're going to work together over the summer to analyze the data, then we can have a conversation. Well, I'm not working over the summer. Okay. Then what's the purpose?
Yeah. Then I guess we're not having the conversation.
Yes. But most people were upset about initially when they got rid of that. I don't know if this is the same with you guys, but they missed their half days because they wanted to go out to lunch because they would get an hour lunch that day. And I was like, no, wait a minute. And then the union president finally chimed in and he was like, wait, nobody else in the district is doing half days. Now we got an equity issue. So we went in a whole other realm with that conversation. So,
yeah, no, it wasn't about lunch when we did it. And one of the things, so I thought that we could move to quarterlies because you can adjust instruction. You can catch any issues that are arising or existing earlier if you go over the quarterlies and use them. And then they asked me if we were going to have half days for the quarterlies. So clearly wasn't an understanding of, you know, the missing the FaceTime. So,
yeah,
you know, we did that and I still get the conversation of, well, the kids are unruly at the end of the school year. And I said, well, please don't say that out loud to me because that means to me that you're just using it to control behavior, like you had mentioned earlier.
Uh-huh.
Actual piece. So the argument now resides that they've had kids come back to them and tell them that they weren't prepared for college because they didn't take the long sit-down exam. So we go back and forth on that. I know.
I love that argument. I've had a couple of teachers say the same thing. And I was like, all right, when was the last time you took a college class? Well, 30 years ago. I'm like, yeah, college is a little different right now. All right. I teach college now. I don't give a final exam. I don't do a 2-hour final exam. My kids have to do a 2 or 3 minute video explaining what they learned and how it lines back to the standards that we're trying to meet over the course of the year. You know, and there are still some traditional that do those exams, but it's not our job necessarily to prepare kids for bad practices at the next level.
That is, can I make a bumper sticker out of that? That is brilliant right there. I love that. Not our job to prepare students for people enacting
for bad practices happening at the next
that
level.
That is so good. That's gold right there. No, and you know, you're 100% right. But besides that, I have a couple college professors on my school council. They're like, no, we don't do that. I can't think of many colleagues that give finals or anything like that. So it's, you know, the battle that keeps going on.
Supporting your teachers and students seems to be a struggle. They just don't seem to be engaged. You wish they would take more responsibility for their learning and culture of the building, but they just don't seem to be empowered enough to do it. So my question is, have you checked out the book Seeing to Lead yet? It's all about creating a true educational experience where learning, growth, leadership, and community take center stage. Full of strategies and resources, Seeing to Lead is about attaining that goal by employing a model that supports, engages, and empowers all individuals to become leaders themselves. Pick up a copy today at seeingtolead.com. That's SEEINGTOLEAD.com. Remember, you don't become a leader and then decide you need to support and recognize others more than yourself. It is the moment you realize it's about supporting and recognizing others that you become a leader. SeeingToLead.com.
That brings me to another topic I want to talk to you about, and that's that sustainable change piece. And I just find it interesting that you're kind of in that position where your last year, suddenly that change was made years ago and they want to bring it back. Or go back to it and not keep that change up. You're working on the grading piece. So now you've stepped away from that school. I don't know if you know this. I'm not asking you this, but I don't know if that change has continued to happen. What I'm really curious about is there's good change and bad change, and it sustains itself sometimes for good reasons and bad reasons. What's the best way or advice you can give on how to get positive change that's sustainable for positive reasons because it's positive and not because it's being forced or it's a iron fist mandate from above?
I think that there's so much of what we do in education that is based on tradition, the way we've always done it. We can't make that change. And you have to really spend a lot of time with individuals that are struggling with overcoming that mental block. I've been doing it this way for 30 years, Dan. You can't expect me to change now. I'm retiring in 2 years. I'm not going to change. And so one, I think it comes to hiring good people that understand that we're always growing and getting better. So hiring is always the most important thing for anything that we're going to try to roll out in our buildings. But then working with them, showing them the research. Sometimes you got to show them the research 3 or 4 times, demonstrating and showing them schools where that initiative you're trying to do is working. One of the best things that we did was just take teams of teachers and say, go visit school X. They're doing it right. And go spend a half a day and just talk to their teachers and listen to them. And when they heard from more and more people that it was doable, you start to build that core network within your building. And so, you know, we don't have a lot of turnover in my district and in my building. And I was really proud of that. So some initiatives took longer than others to get through, but because we tried to take that time to really listen and to listen to feedback from people, they say, this part is not working, or we need to tweak this. So you have to develop people, and then you have to trust that they're going to make the right decisions and listen to them when they've got good feedback that might change or alter your direction.
And, you know, you talk about trust that they're going to make after you develop them, trust that they're going to make those decisions. It takes trust on both ends too. And that's that culture piece, is people need to be able to come to you and say when something's not working and be comfortable with the idea that you're not going to have some type of judgment about them. There's not going to be any kind of backlash, but to just be honest with you that that part of it isn't working, whether it takes a tweak, whether it needs to be thrown out. So building that trust takes a long time. Are there any tips or tricks you could?
And even when you have developed that trust, for some reason, there is a mental block with folks about going to the principal's office. And I would have certain teachers that would come to me and say, Dan, listen, I'm speaking on behalf of this group of teachers. I'm like, well, where are they? Bring them with you. They're afraid to come to you. And always had an open door policy, always tried to be as welcoming as possible. But there's still this innate hidden fear in the back of some folks' minds about going to the principal's office. And I've struggled with how to break that with some folks. And so how do you do that? Well, meet them where they're at. Go to their rooms where, you know, they may feel a little more comfortable or in their own environment. You know, get them out of the building to try to have some of those conversations. Don't give up on trying to, you know, to push. And that, I think then one of the biggest things for me is, you know, when you get that teacher that you just go, they're retiring in 2 years. I can't deal with them. Find that little something positive that you can kind of hook into that to connect them. And there was a teacher that it always comes to mind that I just struggled. They were a very strong union. They had a previous career where union was very strong. And it was always a battle. Everything was always a battle. And then I finally went, all right, well, what does this person bring to the table that I can utilize and connect them with a different initiative? And it was school safety. They were an expert in certain aspects of school safety. And I let them lead that. And it changed. We saw a definite shift in our dynamic and how we work together when I changed my approach to what are the skills this person brings to the table that I can utilize? Might not necessarily be about instruction, but something that we can make a better connection. I think in the long run, that helped with this particular teacher.
I think that's so powerful though, because it connects them and shows them their place in the broader vision of what you're trying to do. I mean, we have these visions, we have these goals, but sometimes these teachers don't, and even your other leaders, don't see where they connect and where what's important to them connects, or what skills they excel in can serve, or how they can serve. So, you know, the idea of you pointing that out and making that connection explicit for them is a powerful thing. So I mean, I could go on with this conversation forever, and I think we could share stories back and forth forever.
Yes, we could.
But as we get near the end of the podcast, there's two questions I ask every guest before they leave. And the first one is, if you were an educational leader, who, not what, would you be?
It's a really good question. I have always seen myself in some sort of a leadership role capacity. So who would I be? I would want to continue to be somebody that learns from others, is reflective about practice, is willing to challenge the status quo, works to develop meaningful relationships, and to continue to grow as a learner, you know, to continue to grow as a parent, to continue to grow as a husband, and just to keep trying to get a little bit better every day, I guess.
That sounds like the perfect mixture for what you're doing. No wonder you were tapped on the shoulder that many years ago.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about a number of things. We talked about you know, some initiatives and how to get change moving and some of the important things to do. But overall, what's the most important piece of advice you would give to school leaders? Or, you know, I say school leaders, but any leader really, because teachers can be leaders, students can be leaders, as they work to better support, engage, and empower those they serve.
So I think the thing that has probably had the biggest impact on my trajectory in my career has been building a network. And it is critical, no matter teacher, businessman, principal, whatever, start now to build a network and get smart people around you. And I was very fortunate to be, when the year that I was principal of the year in Rhode Island, Twitter was starting to just come out, and we were connecting with these educators through the Principals Association, through NESSP via Twitter. And that opened up this network where now I'm not just talking to principals in Rhode Island. I had access to leaders all over the country and all over the world. And I remember we used to do these different chats back then. And every night there were hundreds of different chats, depending on whatever the topic was. And on Saturday mornings, there was Sat Chat. It was run by two leaders out of Jersey. Of course, I can't think of their names right now. I can picture them, but I can't think of their names. And I, you know, it was great to wake up 7 o'clock, grab a tea and just jump in and learn from people all over the country. So that built a network for me that has allowed me to really expand my thinking on so many things. And now I can reach out to people all over to say, hey, what do you think about this idea? What do you think about this? And so building that network, finding your tribe, some people would say, is going to make a tremendous impact no matter what field you're in or who or how you're going to be a leader.
That's such brilliant advice, because it goes right into the other advice you're giving when you're trying to enact change, where you find a place that's doing it right and you send teachers to it. If you can find somebody else that has gone through what you're about to go through or is looking to move in the right direction that you're moving in, you know, it just the idea of having that group of individuals. I love, you know, get smart people around you. Now with Twitter, and I too used to be a big Twitter user, but I'm really not on it all that much anymore. So where, or is there a way people can do that now if it's not Twitter or X, as it were?
Yeah, I've grown more and more frustrated with X/Twitter and have been contemplating what to do next. I know there's a group that I've talked to that are using, I think it's called Threads, that is starting to get out there. I'm struggling with that question. I don't have a good answer right now. I've been using LinkedIn more as my role has shifted out of K-12 and into university level. And so I've been using Instagram a little bit more lately to connect with people, which has been kind of cool because I've been able to, I get to see parts of their building and them connecting with kids. But I'm not really quite sure what that next thing is. But, you know, I listen to a lot of podcasts. I'm doing, you know, those seem to be, I have found those to be a little bit more beneficial, I think, in helping my growth and development. So I don't know what's going to be next, but I'm not sure it's going to be Twitter.
Yeah. There's just a lot going on with them.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a podcast junkie. I listen to podcasts every morning on my way to work. And even as I'm getting ready for work in the morning, but I struggle with X, and I went to Instagram because it was the medium between Snapchat and Twitter for students, where more students would go on it. Not all students like on Snapchat, but not as few students like on X. And it's interesting that you mentioned that, because I did notice that other professionals, there are more and more popping up on Instagram. Now that could just be because I wasn't aware of it before. I've dabbled in the Threads piece, and I've noticed that people are picking up on the Threads piece, but I really did notice a huge uptick in LinkedIn. Like, now I see a lot more going on LinkedIn. So I guess it's yet to be seen what that next platform is.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of LinkedIn, but I also shifted too. So, you know, the K-12 scene is not as big in that LinkedIn sector, but as a principal, when I was reviewing candidates, I always looked people up in LinkedIn just to see what was there. That was always part of my background check. So I think it's worthwhile at least having a presence there, even if you're not posting on a regular basis.
Good deal. Well, Dan, thank you very much for taking the time today. I know I learned from you. I'm sure that people learned from you. If people want to follow up with you or get in touch with you or hear any more about this, how can they reach out to you? What's the best way to get a hold of you?
Yeah, I'm on Twitter, Daniel P. Kelly. I'm on LinkedIn. I have a website, danielpkelly.net, that folks can reach out. I really would love to hear from people that are thinking about going into a master's program to become principals. I'm currently building that out right now. I'm writing syllabi for 14 courses for a new program that hopefully will kick off in 2025. And so I'm always excited to hear from people that have different thoughts, ideas about what should be in a principal preparation program, what was missing maybe potentially or from a program that you went through. So if anybody's got any feedback along those lines, please reach out. I'd love to connect.
Excellent. Sounds great. And I can't encourage enough people. And I have a couple names in mind of individuals in my building that I will definitely have to reach out and put them in touch with you to get them moving towards the next step in their career.
That's great.
Well, that's a wrap, but not the end. Next step, be sure to take action on something you heard here today. Hey, thanks for listening to the Seen to Lead podcast. If you would like to connect for any reason, email me at drchrissj@gmail.com or catch me on Twitter at Dr. C.S. Jones. If you've gotten any value from the Seen to Lead podcast today, you can help me and other leaders create a world-class environment through a teacher-centric approach by subscribing to the show, leaving an honest rating or review, and sharing this episode on social media with your most valuable takeaway. Also, one last thing. Have you had a chance to pick up my latest 5-star rated book yet? Grab your copy of Seeing to Lead anywhere you buy books or at seeingtolead.com. That's SEEINGTOLEAD.com, where you can learn more and continue to improve. Now go have a successful week.
And now a quick word from our sponsor, Jigsaw Learning. Whether you lead at the school, district, or division level, you're serving a wide array of students, and you know that no one person has all the answers when it comes to meeting each of their needs. That's why Jigsaw Learning helps leaders and their staff and faculty to develop a collaborative approach. Every child deserves a team. And when you put together the pieces of effective collaboration, you can realize that team's full potential. Connection, relationships, and authentic collaboration are at the foundation of Jigsaw Learning's work. Through professional learning presented on-site, online, or a blend of both, Jigsaw's team of experienced learning associates works with you to develop a personalized plan to help collaborative response thrive in your organization. Learn why educators have described working with Jigsaw Learning as powerful, wonderful, and beneficial for all students. Visit jigsawlearning.ca and connect with the team for information. That's jigsawlearning.ca.
There are lots of solutions out there for giving students what they need when they need it. But when do they actually do all those things? You need flexible time. When added into your master schedule, flex time enables students to get extra help or intervention, meet with teachers, make up work, get physical exercise, and try new enrichment offerings. If you're thinking of giving it a try, check out My Flex Learning, which unlocks the benefits of flex time without the common challenges. Its intuitive design and SIS integration makes implementation and training a breeze. Make your flex time work for you. Visit myflexlearning.com/B to learn more and receive $500 off your first year. That's myflexlearning.com/BE.